Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Right on the Edge on One Radio. Join us as we feature GLBT, erotica, and BDSM characters, issues, and authors. We don't have to tie them up or flog them to ask them questions that make them squirm or makes them hot, though we're open to doing that anyway. We record new shows every Thursday at 10 p.m. Central. This show is intended for an adult audience since we do encourage saucier conversations, riskier subjects, and here is where taboo is on the to-do list. Get taken right on the edge.
Good evening and welcome to Thursday Night. I am your host, W.T. Prater, and I'm flying solo tonight. And with me, I have the incomparable M.J. O'Shea. Hi,
Hello.
M.J.
Hi.
So to give you a brief intro of MJ, she grew up and still lives in sunny Washington State, and while she loves to visit other places, she can't imagine any other place being home. MJ spent her childhood writing stories, and sometime in her early teens, those stories turned to romance. When MJ's not writing, she loves to play the piano and cook and paint pictures and, of course, read. She likes sparkly, girly girl things, which kind of surprises me a little bit, owns at least 20 different colored headbands, which doesn't surprise me at all, and she has two dogs who sit with her when she writes. Sometimes the dogs come up with the best ideas for story when they're not busy napping. So, howdy, MJ.
Hi.
We
are you really
so
surprised
glad to have
by
you.
The sparkling part?
Not really. I mean, but you are...
sarcasm.
No. Well, see, okay. So you've got your, like, really frilly girl, girly girl type girls, and then you've got your not-so-frilly, frilly, girly girl girls, and you're, like, edging more towards the not-so-frilly. Because I don't know why.
Oh, I guess I'm in the middle, maybe. I like really sparkly stuff, but I also did a lot of sports. I don't know.
Yeah, see? I mean it as the highest compliment. You definitely balance the male and female energy, which is why you write incredibly hot, you know, male-male novels, because you've got the right energy that you inject into the stories that you write. I think it's absolutely, you're one of my favorite writers. You made my 2015 read list like three times or something.
That's cool.
So, yeah. It's kind of sad that I haven't already read all of your stuff, but God, I have little time for reading.
There's a lot
days.
Of it. I've been around for a while, so.
Yes, this is most definitely true. So for anybody who doesn't know who you are, why don't you kind of give us a little bit more about your writing. Tell people what all you've written and what all they might have read of yours.
Okay, so as far as, I would say Coming Home would be the most popular. I usually tend to get the most comments and emails and stuff about that book. That came out in 2012. And I would think, let me see, the other one that most people would recognize of mine would be One Small Thing, that came out in 2012 as well, and I wrote that with
Awesome
Vaughn.
Book.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. I wrote one of the characters, she wrote the other, and we just kind of played it off against each other. It was a really fun book to write. And,
yeah, and it was a lot of fun to read.
Yeah, it was just kind of, we each embodied our character, and I don't know if I could have written hers, and she said she didn't know if she could have written mine, and it worked out well. So it would have been a challenge for us to try to switch.
Yeah. And then there's a sequel to that.
Yes, there's a sequel to that. And then there's two more after Coming Home that I made the little town up Rock Bay in Washington. And then I just had three books that took place there. And I would say those are the ones that people seem to remember the most. Those are my most, I hate to use the word popular, the most widely read. But
awesome. So if you were going to give somebody a NJ 101, what would be the first book that you would recommend them to read of yours?
Oh, God, I don't even know. Hold on. Let me think about that for a second.
I know. It's like asking somebody who's your favorite child. You know somebody's
exactly.
going to walk away from the
yeah.
table being
don't
bad.
Ask, don't ask me which one is my favorite dog. This is almost as bad. I would probably say Coming Home again because that is the one that everybody seems to know. And I don't know. I really liked writing... Probably Catch My Breath, the boy band one, because that one had a lot of fun elements with, like, the Twitter and the tabloid articles, and, it was, you know, I got to do a lot of different stuff with that, so I thought that'd be a good introduction, too.
Now, see, I ashamedly have not read Catch My Breath, but Catch My Breath is on my 2015, and it actually, of all the books that I could think of, because I don't have very many books that I consider to be guilty reads, but I put it down on my 2015 as my guilty read because of the fact that it's about boy bands, which is something as a 36-year-old band supposed to admit that I'm the hugest freaking boy band. Just, yeah. I'm not
you know,
even...
it's okay. Just wear it with pride. I was in love with the Backstreet Boys. It's okay. We all have our moments.
Hey, I would take a massive One Direction orgy any day of the week. Just
no.
And everybody knocks on them, and everybody hates them, and I'm like, why? Are you just mad because they're famous and you're not? Or
oh, I don't hate them. They're cute, but I just absolutely not. They're way too young.
Yeah. See, I don't care.
Like. And I'm like, they're like in high school. No.
Once they graduate off of Disney, I feel like they're free. You know, you can lust after anybody who's no longer a Disney crowd.
It's open season.
So, yeah.
No, as long as it's not Justin. I'm just kidding.
I like Justin Bieber. Oh, see?
Oh!
Yeah, oh!
Shame. But no, I actually did have a lot of fun writing that one, so you'll have to tell me what you think after it's done. Like, it's...
Absolutely.
That has
well,
been,
see,
what
I,
is it,
I
my longest book ever.
I was one of the beta readers. I read, like, the first 5 chapters for you and gave you
and
feedback on
changed.
That. And then I stopped reading it because you sent me more chapters and I wasn't able to get to those in the time frame that
before
you needed. So, but, I
yeah,
mean, the cover to
one...
it is just so wonderful. Who did your cover art on that one?
That would be Elsie Chase. She's my girl.
Oh, should have figured.
We had so
yeah.
much fun with that one, too, because I said, give him boy band hair, and she didn't know what that was, so I just sent her a bunch of examples.
There is definitely a boy band hair, absolutely.
Yeah, so she completely manufactured boy band hair out of thin air. That cover model didn't look anything like that. It was
nice.
Pretty amazing.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So... All right, so I want to take a minute. I had MJ send me Corkscrewed is your latest release, correct?
Yes, for the next month. Until then, it won't be.
Okay. So I had her send me a copy of it so I could actually dig a little deeper into it because I wanted to ask some specific questions about that particular release. And let me tell you guys, for anybody who has if you've read an MJ or you've not read an MJ, this is definitely one of her best, in my opinion. It's just, you start the story, and I started it, and I kid you not, like 2 hours later, I looked up, and I was 45 pages into it. And I say that only because I'm a very slow reader. Anybody who knows me knows this about me. I have to reread things like 3 times because ADD kicks in. But it's a wonderful story. I want to give you a minute. Why don't you tell people a little bit about Corkscrewed and where it came from and what it's about?
Okay. So basically, I knew I wanted to write, like, not a series because they're all going to be completely unrelated stories, but just kind of anti-hero types, you know, guys that are probably straddling the very thin line between not so good and really not good. So I decided the first book I wanted to write a story about and have the main characters both be con artists. And I thought, you know, I thought it would be really fun if, you know, they were both kind of back, I don't even remember, there was some movie that was out when we were really little. I think it was called Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, where the two main guys were after the same prize, and I liked that idea. And so I started Googling, you know, famous, I don't know what you would call them, like con jobs, like, you know, if you do this, this, and this. And so I kind of, I've learned a lot about being a con artist, which is a little scary. But I kind of combined some of the more classic con artist tricks into, you know, what I thought these guys were going to do. And I had them playing off each other, and both of them were doing different things to try to get the same mark's money. And then obviously, you know, sparks fly after that. But I thought it would be fun to start with them as adversaries.
Now, the thing that intrigues me about Quirkstrude is it's a very... I'm getting away from books that deal with a lot of graphic gay sex because, you can only read so many of them before you kind of go, all right, there needs to be something more. And the thing that I loved about Corkscrew is that it kind of does that same thing as far as 45 pages into it, and other than some hot, and I mean just mega hot, makeout sessions, there hasn't been any sexual content, which I really actually appreciate. When you were writing this, did you want to give it that kind of slow burn kind of feel?
You know, honestly, that hasn't been as deliberate, but it's been happening a lot lately. And I think it's just the way that the plots are working out that basically I needed all this stuff to happen, and I needed by the time for, you know, there to be anything between them, it needed to seem realistic. And I wanted, I guess, I wasn't going for the slow burn, but for those two characters and for this story, it seemed realistic. And that's happened to me quite a lot lately.
Yeah, I mean, I am just, the last few books that I've read, like I just finished a book by T.A. Chase called I Call Death Dad. And it was an incredible book, just loved it. And it's YA, so it doesn't have a lot of sexual content. But the last few books that I've read, particularly if they're in the MM category, I need them. I don't need them to be devoid of sex, but I need the sexual content to have something to do with the plot. And I'm so grateful that we're getting these authors, yourself included, who are starting to realize that yes, we love reading sex scenes, but honestly, there are some books out there that you like. I've just gotten to the point where I get a book and I flip through the sex scenes quickly just so I can keep on with the plot because the sex isn't really needed. So
yeah, and you don't want it to be, I hate whatever the word is. Sorry, it's late. What is that word where it's not necessary. It should, you know, something should happen with the characters. That's kind of the way I look at it. And obviously in real life, that's not always the case, but you're reading a story. So to me, I feel like it should either further the plot or further the characters' development towards each other.
Yeah. And the other thing that I really liked about Corkscrew is that these two guys who are gay, it's not a story about them dealing with their sexuality. They've already come to terms with who they are, and yes, they happen to be gay, but it's not that journey of self-discovery and coming to terms with their sexuality, which after a while, again, you kind of, you're, I don't know about you as a reader and as an author, do you get bored reading those types of stories over and over and over again?
Well, you know, honestly, I hate to say the word bored because obviously everybody has to have their own personal growth, and I would never want to say I'm bored of this, you know, deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
But I do like the idea of kind of, you know, as society grows, to where that's not the central issue in a person's life, you know, that the stories can grow with them. And at least one of those characters is at least a couple years over 30. So my guess is he had already grown into himself to a point, and that may not have been the main focus of his life anymore because he had grown past his teenage years and stuff. And I kind of like the fact that there are other things going on.
Well, I think that, you know, I don't want anybody who's listening to think that I mean, like, that coming out stories aren't valid. They are, absolutely.
Yeah.
But when you read an author and it seems like every book they come out with is another coming to terms with your sexuality book, and especially if it's dealing with the same characters over and over again, still dealing with the coming out issues, it kind of gets into that pattern of it feels formulaic and it feels not truthful to those characters and to your readers, especially if you're doing it because you've realized that you can market that. It doesn't seem true anymore.
Yeah. And I don't know if maybe if that is a satisfying topic for people to read about. Maybe it is. I don't know. But for me, I would get, I hate to say bored again, but I would get tired of that issue being the central plot of the story if there wasn't a lot of other stuff going on. I'm not saying it would never come up for any of my characters, but it's definitely something that is not always the main plot.
Well, I think for me, a part of it just has to do with the fact that I'm 36 years old, and there are so many things that are so much more interesting than coming to terms with my sexuality. I've done that. I've been there. And for somebody who is just coming out and they need to gain that self-confidence, I think that those are wonderful reads. But there are some people that at some point you just kind of go, okay, I've read enough of this. And you
might need something else associate with. Not associate, empathize,
now,
I guess.
I'm curious, with Corkscrewed, so you've got these two characters who are both con artists, and they're falling for each other, and the love story between them is beautiful as far as I've read. I'm sure it's going to become tumultuous at some point because it's, you know, it is a book, and otherwise it would be boring. But
yeah.
Let me ask you, when you're writing two characters who are con artists, how do you get your audience to like them? Because you've got two people who are basically making a living lying. How do you balance out the bad side and the good side of them?
One of the things I always kind of believe is, not every reader, obviously, because everyone has their own thoughts, but the audience will all kind of feel the way about your characters that you do because you will write them that way. Kind of subconsciously. So if you think, hey, this guy's kind of a scoundrel, but he's charming and I like him, then your readers are kind of going to feel that overtone as you've written the character, and they'll start to feel the same. You know, even if you take back when we were writing the rock stars, the brother Nick, who was kind of a big, huge mess, people didn't like him, but they also they felt sorry for him and they wanted to see him do better. And that's kind of how we both felt about him in the beginning. So you kind of, you almost use your own feelings as an overtone and it works.
Mm-hmm.
And then also you have to, you know, give a reason for why they are the way they are. You know, maybe the one kid didn't have any other choice because he was on the street. Maybe the other guy's just really good at it. I don't know.
So when you're writing these stories, like when you get to the sexier parts of the story, are there any fantasies that you've lived out through your books, or how do you come to the sexual part of it? How does that work with you?
Honestly, it sounds a little weird, but it has nothing to do with me. Me personally, like obviously I'm in no way a man, and so I don't have the same necessarily the same fantasies that he would have. Definitely not a man. But I would say, like, I kind of try to put myself in my character's head and say, okay, if I was this guy and I'm a con artist and I'm kind of like the gruff character and I'm falling for this kid who's making me feel things I didn't want to feel, what is going to happen in this scene? If I am this guy, what do I want? What's he going to do that's going to drive me crazy? And I almost put myself in their head like I'm experienced like a character in a movie. Like, how would this scene play out if it was a film? What would I want to have happen? And so it's not me personally. Like, I mean, if it was me personally, I mean, it'd all be Chris Hemsworth, but.
Well, I mean, that is a good ideal to have because he does look like he has very tuggable hair.
Yes, I
just,
know.
I think that he would
be. You can add Orlando Bloom in there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Especially Orlando Bloom as his character in Lord of the Rings, Legolas.
Oh,
yeah.
The elf, yes. Yes,
yeah.
Yes, yes. My favorite for many, many years.
Yeah, I might need to take a minute, freshen up downstairs and whatnot, you know. So, what are you read a lot as well. What are you currently reading?
Actually, this is kind of ironic. I tend not to read as much in the MM department partly because I don't want to be influenced and end up accidentally copying someone, partly because, you know, a lot of those people are my friends, so I've beta read some of them. Right now, I'm actually reading a book called Rivers of London, and I had started it a while ago and put it down and picked it back up, and it's a paranormal detective series.
Oh, cool.
Not romance at all. So, and it's fun to kind of get out of the envelope and read different stuff. So
I'm all about reading something that's not romance. I love my romance. My romance genre is an easy place to be. But, genres that are not romance. So
yeah, it's fun to try different things. I'm trying to think of what I read before that. I was on a pretty tight deadline schedule this year, so I didn't get a lot of free time to read.
Yeah.
Sadly. So I'm going to take a break and get some. My book pile will get diminished a little bit.
Get caught up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, as much as one can.
Yeah. And I'll definitely have to see what's been coming around, because I haven't seen any of the new stuff in a while. So I'll have to definitely do some checking out and see what people have been doing.
I'm currently reading, have you seen, there's a really good book by Michael Kudo, Red Rose, which is it's all about a paid assassin. And I'm in the middle of it. I don't know exactly where it's going, but it's kind of awesome, and I love reading about it because he actually reminds me quite a bit of you as far as the assassin's personality. Got that sarcastic wit down. So, it's pretty good.
Oh, I'll have to look at that. I'll look that up. Sounds like something I'd like to read.
Yeah. I actually just finished putting together my reading challenge for 2015. I have 110 books on it, and my Goodreads goal is to read 120 books this year. So, yeah, I'm about
That'd
three
be awesome.
Books behind right now. But, yeah.
Yeah, things get in the way, and you get kind of, I almost dropped my phone. But that's a really good goal. Kind of exciting to do that much.
It is. But when you're trying to balance writing and working and having some type of social life and all that kind of stuff, it kind of can get a little crazy.
You have to do some picking and choosing.
Yes. So what are you working on right now? What are projects that people will see coming out of you very shortly?
That sounds a little dirty. I am... So you said Corkscrewed is what we were talking about earlier. So Corkscrewed is the first of three, and they will have all completely different characters and completely different plots. The only thing in common that they're going to have is one or both of the characters that are in the main characters are going to be slightly unscrupulous. So I already wrote the second one, which is about a jewel thief, and that one's going to be called Family Jewels. And then that one was a little intimidating. The whole thing was set in Europe, all over Europe, and the only place I had ever been was London. So it was a lot of, what does that look like? A lot of Google images. And then this third one is what I'm about to start, and the third one's called X Marks the Spot, and I am outlining it right now. And this one's going to be a treasure hunt. So it's a little intimidating because I'm going to go, you know, Dan Brown, but it'll be fun.
That's awesome.
So I have the stuffy academic who's going to be a bit full of himself and a treasure hunter doing battle over the same
Very
treasure.
Nice. So when you're getting into books, particularly when they're books that are set in places that you've never been before. Do you have people that you go to, like, from around the world that you kind of go, hey, did I capture this place? Or how do you go
about
making sure
that...
Okay.
I do that, and you'll be surprised how many places, you know, you can watch a movie that was filmed there to see what, you know, visually what it looks like. A lot of people do, like, YouTube footage of their vacation travels, so you can you can get kind of like a live slideshow of what it looks like. You can, you know, read people's, you know, I don't know what the word would be, I guess vacation journals or whatever, people publish those, so you can read a little bit of what people thought about the cities and try to get, you know, multiple standpoints so you don't just get someone who was having a bad day. I'll do as much as I can because I know people in a lot of places, but not everywhere. So, and then just from there on, just try to use my imagination and hope it's as realistic as possible. I would love to go to all the places first. That would be my fantasy.
Oh, yeah. And you can totally write that off as a business expense. You're like,
yes,
I had
exactly.
to go
my trip to Rome.
I was writing a book about it.
It was necessary. Yeah, I wish. Yeah,
research.
This last one was like, yeah, oh, gosh, that would have been amazing. But no, alas, I'm hoping that it's as realistic and true to life as possible, so we'll see. But...
So, tell me about the legend of the Nine Sisters. I got completely wrapped up in that.
The one that I made up completely?
Yes.
That was, okay, so where I got that, originally, there's really expensive bottles of wine that I believe Benjamin Franklin supposedly owned, and I don't know if I made that up, that may not even be true. But I took that story and I decided instead of Benjamin Franklin, or is it Thomas Jefferson? It was one of those two when I was doing research. This was like 6 months ago, I forget. But I found that George Washington, this true part is that George Washington liked Madeira wine. So I found that out. And then I found that a lot of it was coming from Portugal at that time. So I decided that the King and Queen of Portugal sent George Washington a gift. And I decided that the Nine Sisters came because there used to be close to my house, there was a row of Victorian row houses, and they were called the 12 Sisters. So I just changed it to 9, and that's where that name came from.
That's awesome.
So,
using real-life experience. That's awesome.
Oh, I do that all the time. There's at least one person in every single one of my books that's a real person, pretty much. I'm trying to think Corkscrew may be the exception to that. But almost most of my books have a real person in them. It's somebody I actually know.
Very nice. So. Well, I mean, that begs the question, has there ever been somebody that you didn't get along with, an adversary or an old boss or whatever, that you incorporated into your one of your books as a villain?
Actually, no. I don't have that many people that I don't get along with. The short list, but I actually haven't done that. No, most of the people have been, like I put my best friend in a couple of books. She's been in more than one. Mostly it's just either friends or else I'll just, like my little werewolf book that came out this summer, the entire pack of werewolves were my friends from high school. Like, every last
That's
name
awesome.
Was a real person. So, and none of them actually know that, but I figured since they weren't the romantic leads, they were just, you know, characters in the background, it was okay.
Yeah.
But,
So one of my favorite things about you, because I follow MJ on Facebook, and MJ and I have had more than a few interesting conversations about music. So what are some of your favorite musical acts that are going on right now?
Let's see. One Direction? No, I'm kidding. I'm teasing you.
well, actually, 5 Seconds of Summer is all her fault. All her fault.
Me?
Yes, you. You got me into 5 Seconds of Summer. That's your fault.
I only know, like, one other song that's not my fault.
But one is all it takes to get addicted.
Huh?
One is all it takes to get addicted.
Apparently not for me, because I still only know the one. Everybody knows that my heart is with Muse, and they always have been. I've loved them for absolute years. They started coming to Seattle to play a long time ago, so I'm just, Muse is my favorite, and they always will be. Let's see, about newer bands. I love the 1975. I saw them back in November in Seattle. They were really good. I was quite impressed. And
okay, I've never heard of them. I'll have to investigate.
Yeah, I'll send you a link or something to some of their songs. They're from Manchester, so he has a start with a dreamy accent, moving right along.
But, very nice.
Yeah, they're good. And then Beck, good old Beck from back when we were kids. His newest album is really good. I'm so in love with it.
I didn't listen to their newest album, but the one before that. And I was just completely, I don't know, I wasn't feeling it.
This is Beck's newest album. It's really, it's different. It's quiet instead of the typical kind of loud, I don't know, where it's at, Beck stuff. It's different. So, I like it.
I'll check that out.
There's any pop music that's been around lately that I'm really into. I'm going to give that an I don't think so. Hold on. I kind of like Meghan Trainor. I think her music's cute, like with the 50s style.
We actually just bought her CD tonight because it came out.
Did it?
Yeah, it came out like, I think, a couple of days ago, less than a week ago. So we went to Hastings tonight and bought a copy of it. So I'm going to probably be jamming out for that for the next week. Or month, or possibly year.
I know the three songs that were on the EP that came out, you know, like 5 months ago or whatever, but I haven't listened to the actual album yet.
Yeah. So. I'm kind of like, I had to fast forward through All About the Bass because I'm so worn out on it. And then
I haven't actually heard it that many times because I don't, I miss, you know, the...
For, like, probably a good 3 months, that was my theme song. I listened to it every single day, at least once a day. And so, yeah, it's gotten to that point where I'm like, oh, my God, please just make it stop. So,
make it go away. No, I like Mary Lambert a lot, but I always have, and she's now just kind of getting to be nationally popular instead of
Seattle
popular.
Have you heard her album?
Yeah, of course. Totally.
Oh, my God. Her whole album. She actually came here when she was doing her tour, and we went for our anniversary. We went and saw her.
I remember that. I remember telling you I was excessively jealous.
Yes. So,
yeah,
she was incredible.
She
came out on stage, and she's like, okay, so most people would come out on stage and tell you, like, they're going to rock your face off. I'm just going to tell you, you're probably going to end up crying. She does this, like, anybody who's listened to Mary Lambert knows, like, she's so real and so truthful in her music that it's like going to church. Like, it's, yeah.
She's quite amazing.
Oh, yeah. So, I know that the show is generally an hour. But we decided we were going to change things up just because that's how we roll with Right on the Edge. So we're going to let our guest off the hook and let her go and get sleep because everybody's exhausted because she's been working her butt off. So I just want to give you a last opportunity. Is there anything that you want to tell people about, stuff you're working on, a personal message, whatever you want to say, it's all yours.
Personal message. I honestly, I think I'm good. You just made me laugh, and I can't think of anything.
Well,
Glitter's
MJ,
awesome.
I just want to say thank you so much for coming on Right on the Edge tonight.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you for having me.
If you want to find out more information about her, you can click on the link that's on the episode page, and that will take you directly to her website. But it is not a difficult website to find at all. It's simply mjoshea.com. And you can find the links to buy pretty much all of her books there. If you've not checked out her books, you need to go do it right now. I'm not kidding. Right at this very moment. Go to that link. Buy a book. Support your author. Mm-hmm. Do it.
I agree.
It's good for your soul. So thank you so much, MJ. I will talk to you soon. Thank you to everybody who's listening to the show. We appreciate you more than you possibly know. Have a wonderful night, and go to sleep, or stay up and go listen to some One Direction or Meghan Trainor or Muse or write something. Whatever.
Yes, write something and read a book.
Yes, read a book. Love you guys. See you next. Bye.
Night.